Start with pointing out the email address where your PDFs should go. Please send them there so that I can put them up on the web page. It's useful for reference also during the discussion sessions. You know, if there was something in a talk you want to bring up, it's useful to have them all available online. All right, so let's get started. Hopefully this will, we'll now get to actually talk about some topics and have some discussions, and even if they're heated, that's better than no discussion. So here we go. Here are some discussion points. There's some missing. Oh, there we are. Things I would like to talk about that came up this morning in the sessions, and the other people will have other things, and I will, take notes during these discussions so that we have a record of it, of them, and we'll also have the taping going on, so we'll always be able to go back. So one of the key things that come up in my mind is, we have these observational constraints now. We have the experimental constraints, and we have theoretical constraints. What does that actually mean for the equations of state tables that we should be using in our simulations? To inform people working on equational state tables, the simulation people should actually, we should put together a list of requirements that we need for using an equation of state table. And there's one issue that continuously comes up in the simulations that at least we at Caltech are doing, and that's an issue between matching between the non-nuclear statistical equilibrium EOS and the statistical equilibrium EOS. So I have a few points on that, and would like to get people's input, what other groups are doing in this respect. And then future direction, what's next in theory, experiment, and simulations regarding the nuclear equation of state. And then, are there any other topics that people would like to see discussed in this session? Yep. So the elastic properties of nuclear matter. Yeah, if you could repeat that with the microphone.
So I just wanted to know what one could do from tables to get elastic properties. I mean, at the very least, the shear modulus, but also perhaps the input from the elastics, from the shear state into the equation of state also.
Okay, so we'll have an entire slide of this. More topics we should talk about. All right, so let's get started with the first topic then, and that's a plot that Evan O'Connor made in the lunch break. And it's taking these constraints and putting on mass radius plots from nuclear equations of state that are used in supernova simulation. So Evan, do you want to explain your plot?
So it's gravitational mass versus radius for 8 different equations of state. Technically, the temperature is 0.1 MeV, so they're cold. They're finite temperature equations of state, but it's the cold neutron star curve. Sweet. So the 3 Latimer-Swesty equations of state in black, magenta, and dark green, and then the H-Shen equations of state in blue. And also in brown is the hyperon that we heard about this morning. The 98 version and the 2010 version are basically identical. So there's only one here, but they're on top of each other. Gang Shen's first equation of state, the NL3, is this maroon curve. And then the 2 FSU equations of state are shown in orange. The one with maximum mass of 1.7 and one with 2.1. So then shown in the, so first the red region is the Hiebler range. So this range is from 10.5 to 13.3 kilometers is the range of neutron star, 1.4 solar mass neutron stars that they get that have a maximum mass greater than 2 solar masses. And then the blue is Andrew Steiner's results, which is, so in principle, this is more than just two lines for theirs. There's a full region, but I just do the two lines because it's much easier. So there's not really any that fall in this blue region. There's really only one that meets the constraints of the red region, which is the LS220.
It doesn't have to fall in the blue region, right? It just has to, for the Haber-Eide one, it just has to go through there at 1.4 solar masses.
The red region, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but really, the LS220 is the only one that goes through this line at 1.4 solar masses and is greater than 2 solar masses. Mm-hmm. So the LS220 is the only one that fits the red region. Yes, that's basically it.
Right. All right, thanks. So that basically means that we can, at this point, we can use only one equation of state, the Latimer-Sweisty 220. Right? Either the others have too low maximum masses, or they make neutron stars that are too large.
It's probably worse, right? Because Jim always points out that that it's very likely that even heavier neutron stars will be discovered, and that you see that the 220 is just a little bit over 2 solar masses.
Right. But won't the two? Well, okay. So what is the parameter you would be tweaking? Just K0, or would you change the symmetry energy too?
Yeah, you could change both.
And what is the effect on the curve of the various changes? Yeah, can we get the microphone?
Yeah, so of course, if you change the compression, you will raise the curve, and if you change the density dependence of the symmetry energy, or the symmetry energy itself, then you could move the vertical portion to the left or to the right. So, but I should say you can do that with the relativistic mean field models as well. So I think you could move them quite a bit to the left.
So how would that work in an RMF equation of state? Maybe Hong Chen or Gang Shen could comment on this.
So we have a new mean field models that is IUFSU that can have a radius around 12.5 and maximum mass around 2 solar mass, so that can definitely go through this region.
What happens if you have a 2.4 solar mass neutron star?
It's possible to tune the parameters, but...
So this is all these you know, the parameter sets that go into the calculations, like the TM1 parameter set, or are these other knobs that you'd be turning?
I think it's a little different from TM1. We have this extra coupling between the ISO vector meson and vector meson. That will change the density dependence of the symmetry energy. That part is different, but the other part is the same. So in principle, yeah, it can be adjusted in the RMF models. But
so just to, you know, emphasize the urgency of, you know, the, for example, you know, advanced LIGO will come online 2014, 2015, and we'll probably be making some observations of binary neutron star merger or neutron star black hole merger in, you know, 2016, 2017. We'll reach its design sensitivity at some point. And what the science that could be done with this is, you know, put constraints in the nuclear equation of state. But if all our models are coming from just one equation of state, we can't really put good constraints on that. So it's important to actually have a family of constraints that of equations of state that go through the parameter space that is now constrained, and you know, we can run and have examples.
So that sort of leads to another question I have, because in looking primarily at the cold equation of state, we did this parameterization that was just a phenomenological, very simple, you know, mapping of a function that would represent represent the candidates, and that seems to have been useful in just having a systematic way to explore the equation of state space that doesn't refer specifically to a model. And of course, it's much more complicated when you have temperature and composition to worry about, but is there any prospect of doing something similar?
So, Jim, do you want to answer that?
Similar in that some sort of phenomenological formula that can capture, I mean, so you talk about changing some parameters in your underlying physics and then translating it through into a single function. Is there any way to have a parameterized temperature-dependent equation of state where you can tune the parameters and cover the space in a sort of an analytic or semi-analytic or fairly fast way rather than waiting for the next full table to be produced? Is there any sort of fitting formula or something that could be calibrated and then used to just systematically cover the possibilities compatible with whatever constraint you're looking at?
The only way I see that something like that could be possible is if you have an equation of state that can be manipulated only at the high densities, because that's relatively simple to even analytic to calculate. But as long as it affects, if those changes affect matter at nuclear saturation density, then they're going to affect the crustal part, the low density part of the equation of state, and then you have to calculate the whole table piecemeal. So if you, I mean, you can always algebraically invent terms that come in only at the higher densities. But once you start changing the symmetry energies, then you have to do the nuclear part. I mean, the symmetry energies around nuclear saturation density to change the radii, then you're going to have to do the lower density parts of the equation of state. And I don't see any way around that except to construct a whole new table. But you can change the higher density part of the equation of state in principle without changing the low density part of the equation of state, but then you're only playing with the maximum mass. Because at high densities, everything is analytic in a Skirm-like model or even a relativistic field model. And so you should be able to do that independently of the lower density part of the equation of state. It's just I don't know in a relativistic field formulation how you could just add pieces that come in only at the very highest densities.
Okay. So in the short term we're fine. Oh, there's a question.
Can you put your last plot again up there?
Yeah, sure.
You always emphasize you always emphasize how things go towards heavier neutron stars, but if you look in this figure here also for very light neutron stars, the equations of state are very different, and basically all the relativistic mean field things cluster together and the other ones are significantly lower, which is also Kai's results for the mass radius lie closer to this lower range. So can somebody from Geng or Shen, can you comment on where the differences are from at very small masses?
I think it's still related to the density dependence of the symmetry energy. In these mean field models, it's kind of too soft at a low density, so that lead to a large radius at small mass neutron star. But in the new mean field models, IUFSU, we can have a neutron star, a small neutron star with, I mean, low mass neutron star with a small radius around 12.5 kilometer. So for some reason, this.
But at least for neutron stars, for cold neutron stars, at low densities, this should match on to some crust equation of state. And so they should be pretty similar somewhere.
Well, it's pretty clear from this figure that all of the relativistic field models have a different crust equation of state than the Latimer-Swesty ones. Because below masses of half a solar mass, you're only looking at the crust. So if you put the same crustal equation of state, I don't understand why a relativistic field model should have a different crustal equation of state than the Latimer-Swesty, because the dominant source of pressure at those densities is from is electrons and neutrons to some extent, because the nuclei contribute practically zero pressure, even negative pressure, in the crust.
Microphone. Use this plot. Do you actually have a crust added up on the two different Shen, for instance?
Yeah, so I don't, so not in the, no.
No.
No,
right.
There's no crust.
So you assume just beta equilibrium, zero temperature, but there is no crust. So
yes.
How to compare, I think.
I'm just looking up a figure that does have a crust.
So it's like, let's say, a bare-bone relativistic mean field theory equation of state.
Well,
we don't know.
This is bare-bones PUV solver. If
yeah, but the equation of state does not have a crust inside it. I mean, it, in the table there's no crust, that's what I mean.
Jim has a comment on that.
So, Evan, you made this plot. So, at low densities, is this just uniform matter?
Yeah, it's just,
okay.
It's just straight LS.
Okay, so you haven't built the nuclei with the... So you haven't used the tables themselves.
Hmm?
You didn't use the tables themselves.
What do you mean by use the
tables? If you had used the Shen tables, for example, either G or H, you would automatically have the crust built in.
But
if you're
so,
just using the underlying nuclear force for uniform matter, then you don't.
Is the crust equation of state in your table?
It has to be. That's part of their table.
Then it's in there, then. I mean, these come from the tables.
So this points to a significant difference in pressure in the crust. So that should be something that's straightened out, I think.
That's a good point. So I'll take this down as a note.
Maybe at very low densities there is, which could be.
But in principle, at a tenth of nuclear density, we shouldn't be seeing this large variation in the equation of state. And that's what's happening at 18 kilometers and larger. So these should all be merging into the same curve.
So that would be a very good thing to sort out, perhaps in a breakout session later this week. All right, so...
At least for to calculate nuclei, there's a big development, at least in the U.S., to construct next-generation functionals based on non-relativistic Skirm functionals. And somehow we have this is not at all here on any list. And so I'm wondering, wouldn't it be easy for someone like gang, wouldn't it be possible for you to also explore Skirm functionals? Why is everybody focusing on the relativistic mean field functionals?
To me, I think one reason, as Professor Shen mentioned, is probably relativity is important at a high density. So that's one reason. And
I think for example, for the neutron, for this neutron skin thickness, there's a very nice correlation between the neutron skin thickness to the symmetry energy. And before people explored other forms and functionals, this clustered into two ranges, a relatively large neutron skin for relativistic functionals and a smaller neutron skin for the Skirm types.
Yes.
And so I'm worried that if one just constructs functionals, or if people start to construct more functionals of just one type, you're really not sensitive to the errors that could be there. You don't explore the full range of nuclear interactions available. And also, many of the microscopic developments that are taking place, that you heard from Kai and from Alex, focus on non-relativistic effective field theory interactions. So I think it would be very important to put also use Skirm functionals.
So that's what's used in the Latimer-Swesty, right? So how complicated is it to replace the old Skirm with this new Skirm and rerun the code? Or would it require a significant update?
So, as Hong Sheng explained, that relativistic mean field theory is based on the relativistic Bruckner Hartree-Fock theory, which is more microscopic many body calculations. So the Bruckner type calculation starts from the nuclear-nuclear potential and then reproduce the nuclear saturation without three body forces. So, and the RMF relativistic mean field models are based on those microscopic calculations, and somehow the effective theory to simulate those, implement those microscopic calculations. So that's one thing. We use the RMF calculations for the supernovae. And the other thing I would like to add at this point is we need to reproduce the nuclear structure or nuclear reaction in a sense that, he mentioned that the neutron skin, the RMF reproduces the neutron skin and the nuclear masses for neutron-rich nuclei. And also giant vulnerable resonances are reproduced by the RMF type calculations. So one should really be careful about the matter and the nuclei both, and just not playing around with the effective symmetry energy or incompressibility. So we have to be placed the basis on the nuclear many body calculations and reproduce the nuclear data. And then we apply to the simulations. So that's my point. And now I'm really care about this, those neutron star observations are now really putting the data, but I'm worrying about whether those data can be reconciled with nuclear data. Nuclear data constraints is somehow given by really the experimental data. And then that's different from the the neutron star, what the neutron star says, as the Jim showed in one of the figures. So that's we are worrying about, whether we can manage both nuclear data and the neutron star data. At the moment, we have discrepancies.
Right. So, do you want to comment on this?
Yeah, I guess I don't understand the point about the relativistic field models being able to fit nuclear data better than density functional models. For example, the neutron skin data isn't good enough to go one way or the other. And as far as fitting energies or the monopole resonance, that basically is a constraint on the incompressibility. So I guess I don't understand what you're, I don't understand the point that the relativistic field models some sort of advantage.
I don't know. I think my point is not the non-relativistic or relativistic. My worry is whether this neutron star data and the nuclear data can be explained by the theory. I mean, data, it seems there's a discrepancy between the neutron star data and the nuclear structure data. And I think RMF and the SCRAM type calculations can reproduce somehow in both manner to reproduce. But I'm talking about the data, nuclear data.
Which nuclear data is inconsistent with?
This one of your slides, this softness is away from the nuclear data, right? From the
well, the compression issue. Modulus of 220 is certainly a reasonable value.
Yeah. So do you think that this the neutron star data currently is
you mean the observational
with,
data?
Hmm?
Are you talking about the neutron star observational data?
Yeah.
I don't view that as being as reliable as maybe Christian feels at this point. I think it's good if we can make models that go through what those observations indicate, but I don't think those observations are the last word. And they're very model, the interpretation of those observations is very model dependent. For example, the X-ray burst data, the models by Suleimanov and Putanen imply radii of 14 or 15 kilometers for neutron stars. So until the modeling of X-ray bursters is a little bit more advanced, I view those as interesting. At least I view the blue curve, the blue area there as an interesting result, but not the final word. Okay, well, the blue band is an astrophysical constraint, yes. So, I guess, I don't know, we shouldn't rely on the observations too much at this point. I think they're, in my mind, things seem to be more consistent with a small radius rather than a large one, but, again, that's based on a model for the interpretation of the observations, in both cases, for the thermal data and also for the X-ray burst data. Those are based on models, and there's no confirmation that those models are correct.
So you mean that there is some still ambiguities of this band? You mean the width?
Yeah, what I didn't have time to show was, for example, if you look at the thermal sources, and I always get the names of the individual sources confused, but there are some of these globular cluster sources that imply a very small R infinity and others that imply a very large R infinity. And when you draw both curves and say what one equation of state can satisfy both a small R infinity and a large R infinity for reasonable neutron star masses, it's a curve precisely like one that comes sweeping over to the left and then sweep suddenly upwards around 12 kilometers or 11 kilometers. And the ones that go up around 15 kilometers are completely cannot explain that data. But the data itself is taken with satellites that have rather poor resolution, and there are problems with some of the X-rays not being counted because of, I forget what the technical word is, but there's too many counts sometimes, and some of the X-rays are missed and so forth. So until we have better observations, the apparent result that there are some sources with smaller infinity and others with larger infinity is a suspect result. So this is just what the current observations are telling us, but future observations may change the story. So as long as we have some sources with smaller infinity and some with larger infinity, the only equations of state that will survive a Bayesian analysis such as the one we did will give an area like the blue region. If it turns out that the small R infinity sources are wrong, then I think it's much more wide open as to what the results will be.
So as a whole, the direction to from neutron star side and the nuclear structure side is still important, right?
I think so. I do take comfort from the fact that the neutron matter results are more consistent with our current picture of the observations than being inconsistent with it. So maybe that's important. That could be very important. And maybe it's telling us, in fact, we are on the right track. But at this point, if the two results were inconsistent, I think the natural result would be to say that the astrophysical observations are suspect. The fact that they happen to be consistent.
So we have some more wide areas.
I think so, yeah.
So Achim or Kai, could you comment on the robustness of the red hash region? So now, you know, we talk about the astrophysical robustness of this region. But what is this red region more robust? Is the constraint that a 1.4 solar mass neutron star, if the maximum mass is 2 solar masses, has to be here?
I think the right, I think the size of the span comes basically from two uncertainties. One is the strength of couplings in the three-body force, and we took a very conservative range for those. And then it comes from the possible extrapolations to high density where we use these different polytropes. So in my opinion, this is, I think it's pretty robust. And what you saw that changed in the red band here for 1.4 solar mass star, if what you saw that changed here is that compared to what was published in the paper where it started from 9.7 or something like that kilometers, the discovery of a 2 solar mass neutron star shifted this band from 9.7 on the left to 10.5. And the reason that the right side stops at 13.3 is this causality limit. And I think that the causality limit of that things really go, that the speed of sound is really the speed of light, is anyway a too strong a limit anyway, because at nuclear densities, one is well below that. The speed of sound is about 0.2. And if one would go to ultra-relativistic densities, the speed of sound would be 1 over root 3, which is also much smaller than 1. It's about half. And so I think the right side of this band is pretty conservative. And I think this is the reason that it's...
Maybe I should add, I mean, on the right side of this band, I mean, we find very small central densities as well. I mean, we have 2.5 times saturation density. So if we would go even further to the right, I mean, the central densities would be, I think, too low to be reasonable. So in this sense, I would also agree that the right-hand side is pretty robust.
Okay, so all these, you know, RMF equations of state then somehow need to be shifted over into that band. Pretty much, it's that. Would you agree, Sumi? Would you agree that the parameters going into the RMF calculations should be chosen such that the RMF equations of state are moved to the left into the band?
No, at the moment I'm not sure, because Jim told us that there's some wider band than for the blue. And it's actually not easy to just change the parameter. So as I told you, we have to do the nuclear structure calculation, whether the change of the Lagrangian of the RMF reproduce the nuclear structure and other giant monopole resonances and so on. So I would like to see those data before we change the form of the RMF. And as a matter of fact, actually, we've been working on that, but there's no enough data to determine precisely if we increase the degrees of freedom. So that way, I'm being still working with team one. So we are waiting for more nuclear data to pin down this Lagrangian form, in a sense. Yeah, that's my opinion.
I mean, I guess maybe to ask Christian's question somewhat differently, every theory curve also has an uncertainty, right? You have an uncertainty because your parameters aren't well determined, and that's why one has Latimer Svesty 180 or 220 or some range of compressibilities. And so the question is, can also be asked for the blue and is it violet for your curves, isn't it possible to just change the parameters and move it closer to FSU, which after all is also a relativistic mean field model, and so it would just say that there's some relatively large uncertainty in the present functionals that determine the radius, right?
Well, if I ask technically, I think it's possible to shift this way by involving, like this Gaussian is a density-dependent isovector
right.
term. And yeah, that way we can actually shift to this direction, I think.
Right.
Although we have some support of the massive neutron star. Then I'm caring about the difference between the relativistic Bruckner type calculations. And we actually somehow rely on the outcome of the Bruckner type, relativistic Bruckner Hardy 4 calculations. And I'd like to see whether this vector potential, density dependence of the vector potential and the scalar potential matches well with the RMF, or vice versa. So the RMF matches with the behavior of the potential in the relativistic Bruckner potential.
But also the relativistic Bruckner calculation has an uncertainty.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. You have to be careful about that. So, in addition to the natural outcome of the three body force, but we may have some contribution from others. And that's one of the things. Yeah, we have to be careful about that always, surely. But within the relativistic approach, yeah, we can say, yeah, we are running on this program, yes.
All right. So I guess we can go on to the other topics. Discuss this to death. Right, so what do we need for simulations? Is there additional need for communication between the modeling community and between the US people? The density range was shown today by multiple people doing US, so you guys are all aware of what's really needed. There may be a question of how many data points we want, obviously how many data points make sense. Obviously from supernova modeler point of view, we want to have as many points as possible in the table, but of course that takes a lot of time to compute them. One question is, how do people handle the tables in their code? They probably don't use the raw tables, but everybody, you know, has sort of their own set of routines to post-process the tables and add leptons and photons. I think that's pretty much clear. What is not so clear, maybe, to people not doing GR simulations, general relativistic simulations, is that GR codes need a correct energy zero, simply because in the stress energy tensor, it's not just the rest mass density that curves space, but it's the energy density. So it's rho being the baryon density plus rho times epsilon being the specific internal energy. And that's one of the issues that people doing GR have to deal with a lot. What is the actual real energy zero of the table? And how do we get this right? So that would be a point to discuss how that can be done better, whether one should, you know, say, well, we measure all masses in the neutron mass, and then we have a certain energy scale. Another important point, and that came up this morning, is it still good enough to just use an average heavy nucleus? Or do we really need to have tables that have an entire set of nuclei and their abundances? Do we need that for accurate simulation? And I guess that's the point where we should start discussing. And I would like to, you know, get the supernova modelers involved to tell me what they think they need. And the U.S. people should say what they could do. So maybe Pronson wants to talk about this.
So I think one of the most important points about this average A and Z or multiple nuclei is that, you know, we, for example, and I think others have tables of emission absorption rates on nuclei, and sort of by definition, the most tightly bound representative nucleus is not the nucleus that is participating the most in that emission and absorption for neutrinos. So to be able to get that even close to right, we're going to have an A and Z. So we've actually done NSE calculations and folded that into our tables of emission and absorption rates on nuclei and sort of wholesale replace. And for those reactions, we ignore the average A and Z that any equation of state returns. So even something that would be maybe a representative nucleus and then some measure of those, I think we saw double peaked Gaussians earlier today that gave some hint about the relative widths of those Gaussians in the AZ plane might help. But it's important, you know, the things that are undergoing the most active, the things that are contributing the most to the emission absorption are at the tails of those Gaussians, not the centers.
So when you do these there's a question there.
But, I mean, doing NSE, you're assuming that the NSE describes the composition at least at the same level that the equation of state. But if the composition predicted in both approach is very different, then you have to do it with the equation of state. I mean, the important point is that the average nucleus for the composition may not be the nucleus that determine the process you are interested to describe. Being electron capture, being neutrino opacities, being any dynamical processes you want to describe.
What you were going to ask, Christian, was what do I mean when I say we do the NSE. So we essentially have a table of emission absorption rates on nuclei that is completely divorced from the EOS in some sense and is only tabulated in rho TNYE, for example. So it's even one step removed from the usual sort of tie to the equation of state. So I think this is very unsatisfactory, and I don't like it at all for precisely the reasons that Gabriel just outlined.
So what Gang in his talk this morning said that he's working on, you know, tables where he actually computes emissivities and scattering cross. Is it just scattering or also emissivities? Because that's in principle that you would want, right? You want to have as the US is being calculated and you have the entire spectrum accessible of nuclei that you should have of a given rho TYE, you could then calculate the consistent interaction rates.
Yeah, in principle, we want to calculate the general opacity that is consistent with this equilibrium state. As I mentioned this morning, the first step we want to do is to calculate the neutrino nucleon interactions and then move on to include the interaction between neutrino and the heavy nucleus. And during the lunch, I talked with Jim about the necessity to include the multiple nuclear distribution. I think maybe one first has to study the difference between the neutrino interaction with average nucleus and then neutrino with a distribution of nucleus and see the difference, and then we can decide whether or not to include the multiple distributions.
So that's an important thing that could be sorted out soon, right? Okay.
Aren't thermodynamic quantities like the pressure just very similar? Okay, so one has to really look at details in the neutrino, into neutrino physics. Ah, okay. But so from the point of view of the equation of state, I think whether you have this all in or the way Jim does it with an average nucleus will be very similar. We saw this already in the real equation of state, that when we compared to Latimer-Svesty and so on for thermodynamic quantities, it was very similar at low densities. But if one looked at some details in the composition, there can be some differences, of course.
Right, but the supernova guys want to get the neutrino transport right and the interactions right. And right now everybody, at least, we use the average nucleus. So my question would be, how different is it? And this is what I put down. How much difference does it make in what phase?
I think now basically every supernova modeler group that took the time to implement it can use consistent composition with the rates for the conditions where you expect to have nuclei present. NSC will be a correct description for the times where you have nuclei for computing the rates. At high densities, then you have to the situation becomes more complicated, but then you don't have nuclei. You don't talk about an average A and Z. Yeah, the rate may be more complicated, but I don't know if you understand. And also, I think there is another issue. Even if you have the composition in the equation of state, you have to interpolate in the composition. And at the same time in YE, how you guarantee that all the interpolations guarantee that you obtain the correct YE? Do you understand what I mean?
Probably not, no.
So you have a composition which is a neutron, proton, and some heavy nucleus with some given abundances. And you need to interpolate on the different variables. And then you have to interpolate also in the electron abundances. It's not guaranteed that the numbers that you have interpolated match the electron fraction you have interpolated.
Well, you check this, right?
But then you have to correct in that some way.
Right. Yeah.
But that may not be the one the equation of the state was predicting.
So, you may be talking about two different things here. The point was including, a spectrum of nuclei in equation of state and then in the neutrino interaction calculations. you're probably talking about the GSI electron capture tables, right? Where you do the shell model calculations and, right? So that I did not, you know, wasn't talking about this. But I may be unaware of the things that they could connect them, right? You have to pick an average, or you have to pick a spectrum of nuclei. How do you pick the spectrum of nuclei? And this is, I think, what Bronson said. This is not necessarily consistent with what the actual equation of state would predict. Or I think Achim said this.
No, I think that the conditions where nuclei dominate the rays, I think NSC should be very similar to what another equation of state predicts. Because nuclear interactions should not be so important. The densities are relatively small. You are talking about densities before neutrino, below neutrino trapping.
Right, so below 10 to the 12 grams per centimeter.
So at these conditions, NSC should be okay. And this is where nuclei will dominate on the rays.
Okay, so let me ask then the equation of state people. Have you compared your average nucleus, for example, or between the Shen equation of state and the Latimer-Swest equation of state, and what are the differences? And what are the differences to what an NSE network would produce? Do you have seen differences, Bronson, for example?
We haven't done that, but that's I think exactly the point we were talking about earlier. I agree. Gabriel's right. You have the electron capture rates at 10 to the 12 and below, and I'm very happy with a nice representative nucleus at nuclear saturation density, but there's two decades in density there where there is, you know, later, for example, there will be a hot mantle radiating neutrinos, and it will be in medium effects, and it's bridging this notion from having well-defined but drippy nuclei to uniform nuclear matter. That's precisely the point where spectrum formation occurs, for example. And that's really what I'm the most worried about. And the regime where the equations of state don't give us a lot of information because of the reason. It still continues that even as things become less and less localized and stop looking like nuclei, that most tightly bound thing is not going to be the thing, I think, that's going to dominate the emission.
Chris, yeah, mm-hmm. Can I comment? So I agree this importance of the composition at low density to determine the electron capture. So a tiny amount of the nuclei can dominate the reaction rate. So what I am trying to say is now the stage is that the table, equation of state table, should provide some format for the neutron transport calculation. So can we discuss on the suitable format for electron capture or neutrino, whatever? Otherwise, this the fractions table is enormous. So somehow we need to provide the average rates or, I don't know, average rate averaged by the mass fraction versus that times electron capture rate or something. So can we make the format for those equation state table workers can provide in that format?
So do you have an opinion about this, Bronson?
I think I understand what Sumi is saying, that we need to pick some composition set that makes sure that we span the full range of YE for the densities of interest, right? And your question is, can we converge on such a distribution? I don't know. Having done smaller examples of this for type 1A simulations where an electron capture becomes important at 10 to the 9, it can be tricky if you try to restrict how small the composition is. But one thing that I want to point out is, with people using tables now and with machines and runtimes coming online that don't restrict us to having to use local memories anymore, perhaps more is better for tables. And no matter, maybe we shouldn't feel too constrained to use too small of a distribution set, too small of a composition set. You know, big machines have plenty of memory, and there are now ways to access all that memory straightforwardly. So if you're a table, if you're an EOS table builder, I would encourage you to put more information in the table, even at the cost of it getting large. So that's the only opinion I have about what the distribution, the composition should look like.
A little bit careful one has to be with parallelization issues. If one goes now to more and more distributed cores, and each core has to have its own version of these tables, then I see new concerns coming up about the total amount of memory large simulation takes. Another point to the format, now it's done always the way that people are making tables for the equation of state, and then these tables are used in the simulations, and then one has always to define an interface format that is suitable for everybody. But in principle, the simulations use the equation of state in any continuous point and many, many times, and not only in the exactly calculated table corner points. So why not looking at the equation of state as a fitting function where one has parameters? The parameters in this case would be the table, and the function that is fed with these parameters and produces a continuous function at any point. And then the interpolation schemes would belong to the equation of state developers and equation of state side, and should be provided together with any set of parameters that feeds this interpolation scheme.
So Marius's first point, I was saying almost the exact opposite of you, except I wasn't. You're absolutely right, but I think the point is now with on most even clusters, you don't have to have a local copy for every core. You could, in fact, distribute it everywhere and still have hope of being able to access a distributed table very, very quickly. So it's absolutely the case that you can't afford to have a local copy, but maybe you don't need it with modern methods. And to your second point, it's all about how fast the so then you would have an algebraic expand. You would have an algebraic fitting function at each row T and Y E point, right? I think it's just a matter of how high order that has to be and how expensive it is to compute. If it's just as cheap as piecewise linear interpolation, then it's a win. If it's very much more expensive, then perhaps not.
I think a related issue to this concerns these new generations of tables that are being made. They require intensive calculation at each point and presumably a high degree of convergence in the iterations that are done in order to produce something that's reasonably smooth. But then when you go, I've heard this before, that when you go to take derivatives in the, within the table, that is very choppy from point to point. And not to blow my own horn, but one advantage of the LS approach was that everything, the whole calculation is analytic, and all the derivatives are calculated analytically, so there's an inherent degree of smoothness. So the advantage of developing some all-inclusive way of taking an underlying table that's pretty smooth, but not perfectly smooth, and being able to interpolate in it so that all of the required quantities are smooth would be a huge advantage and would mean we could calculate more realistic tables without having to worry so much about the absolute convergence at each point. And I think we can incorporate more physics that way. But now, as long as we're required to have enormous degrees of convergence so that the table and its derivatives will be smooth, is, I think, pushing us beyond the limits that we want. I mean, it's technically possible, but we don't want to spend our lives doing this.
It's also very easy to take the great consistency of the Latimer-Swesty table and from user error to make bad derivatives because you don't snap to the Latimer-Swesty grid, but in fact you use your own grid. And yeah, I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah, because all the second
phase transition,
because all the derivatives up to second degree are stored within the table, which is not possible with a Thomas Fermi or a Hartree-Fock or a Hartree computed table. So what we need is a general interpolation scheme that can take a table that's reasonably smooth but not perfectly smooth and be able to calculate all the derivatives that you need for the hydro without worrying about the chopping that goes around, that goes from point to point.
I can comment on that. It's related to how people actually handle tables in their code. From my experience, using both Shannon equation of state, I had to smooth the table or like massage the table somehow, and this is related to the fact that the derivative, the second derivative, especially the sound speed that is crucial, it's far from being smooth and nice. So I actually tried to develop a fitting just phenomenological. So try to cut starting from the free energy and try to make an interpolation in first in density and then moving with in temperature and try to find like two different points in which I have a high density region and middle, let's say average middle density region and a cross part, let's say, and trying to use polynomial function, so and then basically get the coefficients instead of storing the points of the table, storing the coefficients, and so that I can use, let's say, if I somehow need an interpolation or extrapolation, if I'm outside the table, I just need to stick that in a formula, and that's it. Basically very easy. So I try to do that. It's not easy, at least especially for somebody that just does the simulation and doesn't have a lot of input from a nuclear point of view. That would be really, really useful for, so that I can get all the derivative, first derivative and second derivative, starting from the free energy, all smooth and necessary for our scheme to work properly.
On the same line, I just wanted to say that there's a very nice paper by Timms and Swesty, 2000, in which they construct an interpolant in density and temperature that uses the Helmholtz free energy and its first and second derivatives to construct quantities and its derivatives that are smooth and also, very importantly, thermodynamically consistent. And in the case for the nuclear physicist, it would be very, I assume, simple in that case to just tabulate, say, in this case, 5, or if you want to add the electron fraction, 2 more or 3 more derivatives of the Helmholtz free energy relative to electron fraction, and then construct a three-dimensional Hermite polynomial, essentially calculating the same, and in that case avoiding spurious noise introduced by inconsistency in the thermodynamic quantities that, for example, generate the entropy. So
yeah.
That's just
it's a very interesting work, but just disassume the fact that the points of the table are thermodynamically consistent itself. So that means that if you start with a table that is not thermodynamically consistent, or at least not with the accuracy that you require, then your fit, even using Hermite polynomial, is not going to be any better. Actually, it introduces even more noise. That's my experience, even extending this to electron fraction dependence also.
So sure, that's true. But at the points in your table, you're consistent. But in between, are you still consistent?
Well, I'm not sure that the points of the table themselves are actually thermodynamically consistent. So actually, my experience tells me that at least some of the table are not. The Latimer-Swesty is, of course, because it's constructed,
sure,
that it's enforced. But for the Gang-Shen at least, and the other Shen, I'm not so sure about that. At least not at the level that it's required for the interpolation.
And in addition to that, you'll only be able to get those quantities that are derivatives of the free energy. How do you get the compositions to be consistent with that? Okay, so that was useful. I think we have coffee waiting for us. And then we have a final session of talks. Perhaps we can continue. There's some points we didn't get to, so I'll save these, and we'll bring them up later or tomorrow. All right. 30-minute break.